Let's move on to our next segment. Tasha's Monster of the Week.
Tasha's Monsters of the Hideous. This hideous monster is the Blade Songer. Used to be for elves, now it's for everybody.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigle.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we are taking a look at the Artificer Sorcerer Multiclass, and then later on, all of the wizard changes and additions in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. So pull up a chair and stick around for a while.
Today, we're going to be talking about the Artificer and the Sorcerer Multiclass. So the Artificer is your Tinkerer, takes 13 intelligence to multiclass into, and they are a half-caster. I think their main things is just around that being like the engineer with magic. And this is the first one that we actually get to discuss the Armorer subclass in addition to the other three. So I'm excited for that. Then on the flip side, we have the Sorcerer with 13 charisma to multi-class into. They are a full caster and generally get their powers from just being born with it or touching something that gives them magic, or just in some way being imbued with magic and not really learning or offering up anything for it. Generally speaking. So let's go ahead and hear some first thoughts on this multi-class. Kevin.
So this one definitely has a lot going against it. You have two spellcasters with different ability scores, intelligence and charisma, and right away that's already an uphill battle. But then in addition, one of those classes is the Sorcerer, which benefits from being a sorcerer for as long as possible. Their main thing, meta magic fueled off sorcery points, goes up, and the sorcery points goes up based on sorcerer level. So it's hard to multi-class with this. Luckily, though, the Artificer being a half-caster means there's a lot of cool different non-spell-related features that I think the Sorcerer can nab and benefit from. So I think there's stuff, some stuff to do here, but there's also a lot of crap.
Yeah, this is definitely going to be a trickier one. Lots and lots of traps where you could just make a character that just genuinely isn't fun to play, as you're kind of bad at a lot of stuff. Will, do you have any riveting tidbits to add?
Kind of. We've discussed this before. The Artificer was never a good dip. And the Sorcerer, I wouldn't say, is a good dip anymore either, if you're just chasing metamagic, because we went over it. There's now a feat for it. So, I don't know. It's a rough combo.
Yeah, I might argue that Artificer is an okay dip. It does get infusions at level 2, which are amazing. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, again, Armorer as a subclass is a tempting 3-level dip. I mean, getting heavy armor proficiency and all of its other, you know, guardian and infiltrator abilities is nothing to scoff at. And for any spellcaster, yeah, that might be worth chasing.
Yeah, that was my main idea with this as well. Mainly being a sorcerer with a 3-level dip down to armor. And yeah, that would get you up to heavy armor proficiency. You get infusions along the way. You don't slow down your spell casting too much, because for Artificer, it's half the level rounded up, which is nice, as opposed to rounded down like all the other half casters. And it opens up your spell list a little bit. Yeah. What's nice about how Artificer is the prepared caster, so they get their entire list of level appropriate, and then could prepare differently per day, so it's not like you have to pick and get locked into just like 3 spells. So it kind of gives you this wide berth of spells to pick from. And I think it would be pretty easy to avoid spells that require intelligence. Because if you're mainly a sorcerer, you're probably just going to get intelligence to 13, and that'd be that.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about an Artificer dip as well is you do get your armor proficiencies. Even ignoring the Armorer, which gets you heavy armor, Sorcerers get 0 armor proficiencies. Mm-hmm. So they're relying on either the Draconic Bloodline to get some AC or Mage Armor. But if you go Artificer, you get Light Armor and Medium Armor, even if you don't start out as an Artificer.
Right. It's That's one that is hard to justify. Like, I know we kind of have these conversations where this is the class being made, or this is the character being made, so that's a benefit. But if you do look at all of your choices, if you're just chasing armor, there's definitely better options than getting your intelligence to 13 and multiclassing an artificer. Go paladin, and you'll get heavy armor. Go fighter, and you'll get heavy armor. Go hex warlock, hexblade warlock, and you get medium armor.
None of the classes give you heavy armor if you go into them.
Yeah, just start as them. You know, okay, yes. Take one level in fighter, then.
Yes, you're right. If you are like
sorcerer,
high level view trying to build a character, yes.
Right.
Though, one of the things that people normally will multi-class, will start in sorcerer for is the constitution saving throw. But these both actually get constitution saving throws. Artificer gets intelligence as their other one, and sorcerers get charisma as their other one. So one thing that I do like is it really does not matter which of these classes you start into, except for that one thing where you can just choose which one's more important to you.
Yeah, if you multiclass into sorcerer, you get no proficiencies, but
they don't get any anyways.
Yeah, they get a couple skills.
Right.
Yeah, where then if you multiclass into Artificer, you get the armor proficiencies and the artisan tools and tinkerer's tools and all that stuff that's required to be an artificer.
First day of artificer school, they're like, where's your tinkerer's tools?
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah, and then specifically the armorer, which you can pick up at third level, is just kind of universally cool stuff. Yeah, heavy armor, and you can make this magical heavy suit of armor where you don't need the strength requirements to wear it, which is great. So that's, you know, you're already worrying about intelligence and charisma. Now you don't have to throw strength in the mix. And then you just get some cool benefits. Especially if, like for Guardian, where you get a melee attack, which usually you normally wouldn't get. And then the defensive field where you give yourself
10 temporary HP. Hit
points. Yeah.
Yeah, and that one does rely on your artificer level. You get temp HP equal to your artificer level. I think you can do it as many times as your proficiency bonus. So that one is kind of tricky. If you're only taking three levels in armor, in armor, then it's really not too great, but it's still free temp HP. And like, you've got heavy armor, so it's fine. You don't need it to be that much. That's like little icing.
Right. And then, yeah, the infiltrator being able to do ranged attacks. But then again, I mean, you're fighting against cantrips, which...
Right.
I don't know if that's really worth
it. You are losing against cantrips.
I say, yeah.
Especially when you factor in that you can use either dex or intelligence. And, you know, if we're talking about keeping your intelligence low, that's not going to happen. And your dexterity is not going to be higher than your charisma. Unless you really are... making characters on another level that we don't understand. The artificer sorcerer who's got 20 in dex and 13 in charisma and intelligence.
Right.
Quality builds.
Yeah, that's the choice I'd make.
Yeah. Or you never know. A lot of people roll stats instead of doing point buy. They might end up with 18 and all three.
That's such a... I think about this all the time, but it's like, it's such a bad way to talk about any multi-class. It's like, oh yeah, if your stats are just like 18s across the board when you start, this will be fine. I mean, there's a couple things you can do. It's like, yes, you're totally right. And maybe that is applicable to some people's situations, but
right.
No, it's not.
No. Yeah. A negative, though, for going armorer is those melee attacks or the ranged attack you get from your suit, the guardian or infiltrator suit, as you mentioned, it's strength, dex, or intelligence, none of which is probably going to be that high.
Right.
Like, the benefit of it is if you are just an artificer, your intelligence is your highest stat, and so you use that and you're happy. In this case,
you know, all that said...
That's a little rough.
I do feel like there's at least some... benefit to taking like a three level dip into sorcerer. I know, Will, you mentioned there's a feat out now that gives you metamagic options. It's still somewhat limiting. I mean, maybe it's better overall, but sorcerer, you're getting more spell slots, which artificer's only a half caster, so you're getting more spells, more spell slots and meta magic options that you can now convert into sorcery points, which just from the feat, you can't do the whole conversion aspect. There is at least something there of giving yourself more spellcasting and being a better spellcaster for Artificer. You're probably better off, not probably, you are better off going into Wizard for these things, just to like, you know, straight up get more spells. But there's at least that aspect with Sorcerer where I feel like the meta magic can play into it. You can use your meta magic for your Artificer spells and, you know, make it a bit better of an Artificer, or sorry, spellcaster.
I can't buy into that. It just because of the ability score difference.
But you
and
only
it being so limited. So you go three levels, so you get three sorcery points to play around with instead of two from the feat.
And you can convert them.
Yeah, not much though. Whereas if you go wizard, you just get the arcane recovery.
No, I mean you can convert your spells into sorcery points. You can't do that with the feat.
Right, okay, I thought you were saying sorcery points into spells.
No, that's not worthwhile.
Yeah, the problem is, it's just not that good.
It's not great, but it's not that great for sorcerers either.
No.
But if you like the idea of tinkering with your spells, and that's like, you know, how you want to go about it, that's one way that you can try and do it. Not the way I'd suggest from a, you know, broad appeal, but there's a possibility. And in that build, you don't need to have your charisma even over 13. I mean, you probably want it at like 14 or something just because, but to get just three levels into Sorcerer, you can just do that and you don't have to focus on charisma that much.
Yeah, I mean, make sure you pick spells that don't require a save or...
Right, which I don't think...
Well, if you're just doing the burning of them into sorcery points, it doesn't matter at all. You don't even have to pick the spells.
Right.
With really much thought.
Yeah, you get a few extra spell slots and yeah, just turn them into sorcery points.
Right, though sorcerers definitely aren't known for their utility spells in comparison to wizards. You can probably find a couple in the first three levels.
Or even artificers, to be honest. The artificer has a ton of the utility spells, so it's not like you're getting a whole lot.
Right.
Right. So if you did do this mythical sorcerer dip that we never, ever advocate for, what subclass would you pick? Because you get those at first level.
Yeah. So I think the first one that jumped out at me just fitting the artificer was the clockwork sorcerer. Because that is
That's very much an
order style class mixed with artificer, which has a very much an order vibe to it. And I think you could go whatever artificer you want. And then clockwork, you at least get the restore balance ability, which I actually like a lot. I know we talked about that in our sorcerer episode. You can remove advantage or disadvantage from a roll as a reaction up to your proficiency modifier. So even a one level dip into sorcerer is going to get you that ability and, you know, get you a couple uses of that per day, which honestly, I don't know how many uses you need of that per day, but it's pretty darn useful when you've got it. Then you also get two first level spells just for free on top of the other sorcerer ones, like from their sorcerer list. And the two that they give you suck. It's Alarm and Protection from Evil and Good. Not a huge fan of those, but you can replace them with an Abjuration spell or a Transmutation spell from the Wizard, Warlock, or Sorcerer spell list.
Right.
So from there, you can get a lot of good stuff. Absorb Elements is an option, which I absolutely love and is a first level spell reaction. No save, you just can have damage from, or you get resistance to a damage type as a reaction. I think it's elemental, so it's not like bludgeoning or anything like that, but...
Right, yeah.
Super useful.
Alpha, yeah.
Right. And then there's some other options. I saw like Armor of Agathys on there, which has a first level spell, like casting at that level. Not too strong, but having it as an option as an artificer, love it.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're armorer or battlesmith up in the fray there. Just one thing to clarify, when you could swap those levels out when you gain a sorcerer level. So if you just go one level dip, you're never going to be able to swap those out. You have to at least go
Do you think that feels a little weird to me? It's like, well, I gained the sorcerer level. I want to swap them right from the start.
I said, whenever you gain a sorcerer level, you could replace one spell you gain from this feature with another spell of the same level.
Okay, I will say rules.
The implication being, yeah.
Yeah, when you level up. To.
That's fair. Rules is written, no, you cannot. And that's perfectly good to know. I think that'd be really dumb if I said, like, well, can I just replace these at level one? And the DM was like, oh, no, you have to level up first, sorry. From like an
I would make you level up first.
No, you wouldn't, because you wouldn't DM.
Alright, I'd make you level up first.
Okay.
I mean, it makes sense to me. It's like you leveled up, you grew in power, you're kind of forgetting these spells and drawing in new ones.
Sure.
That makes sense to do it on a level up as opposed to just whenever.
Sure, fine. Then, all that said, you still probably want to go at least three levels into this.
For the meta magic.
Yeah, for the meta magic, for more spells, all of that.
Yeah, if you've already committed the charisma, it's like, yeah, might as well go to three levels.
Yeah.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
When we say committed the charisma, I feel like getting a stat to 13 is something I do on accident for something I don't really care about.
I'll do that it depends on the character concept you want to play. If you're trying to be the party's face or just in general better in social situations, yeah, charisma's fine to have up there, even if you have no plans for the class. If not, if there is a bard in the party who has 20 charisma and they're going to be doing all the persuading and sweet talking and you just don't care about that, it is kind of a waste.
Right.
You know, as opposed to like dex is always going to be useful. Wisdom getting up there will always be useful. Obviously, constitution will always be useful. Charisma is kind of one of those.
You say wisdom's always useful?
Yeah, like perception. I mean, that's probably the most commonly rolled ability.
Everybody
check.
Has perception. Why does everyone need to have proficiency in perception? Just leave it. Let other people be good at it.
That's how it works. In terms of how surprise round works, everybody needs to individually check if they're surprised, so.
Sure.
I see it come up a lot. Perception rolls.
It definitely does, but I wouldn't say it's as important as, say, constitution.
No.
So I could easily see a character like this not caring about strength. They don't really care about dex. They don't really care about wisdom. So you've got three stats that just don't matter. That's about the requirements of every class ever, usually, is two or three stats that you need to focus on. So it's like, it's not impossible. I'm not saying that it's worthwhile to chase them both, just that getting it to that 13 or 14 level, it's not that hard.
Yeah, for a while I was playing a character that I needed strength, dex, and charisma.
Right. And you still had it, and that character was extremely effective.
Right. But that was a paladin rogue. Those classes also had
a lot more synergy worth chasing.
Yeah, a lot more synergy than artificer sorcerer.
Very true.
Yeah, it was not stat bound at all.
That's true.
Right.
But this isn't entirely either, minus some save DCs. It just isn't very good.
I would say the artificer has a lot that relies on intelligence. Yes. I think every subclass does. So armor, we already talked about their special weapons, using intelligence.
And that battlesmith. Oh, sorry, not the temp HP. That's level, sorry.
Right. Yeah, and then the battlesmith, again, their big thing is you could replace your strength and dex when it comes to attacking with intelligence. And their steel defender stats also go up based on intelligence. At least their health, possibly other things. I'm not going to look at that in detail. The artillerist, like the force ballista, it's a ranged spell attack. Meaning you're using your intelligence. Yep. The flamethrower is they make a dex saving throw based on your spell save DC, which uses intelligence. And the protector, which gives you temp HP of 1d8 plus your intelligence. Alchemist, maybe alchemist doesn't, but who gives a shit about the alchemist?
And the final point, they're preparation casters. So the higher their intelligence, the more spells they can prepare per day.
Yeah. That's a big one. And
they have a bunch of other stuff.
I never played preparation casters.
They're interesting. But also it's Flash of Genius, which if you're talking about getting this to 7th level, then you're probably focusing on intelligence over charisma anyways.
Right.
But still, just the artificer has a lot of stuff baked into it that focuses on intelligence. Compared to the sorcerer, that actually doesn't really care what your charisma is, like, throughout the entire class.
Right.
It's kind of weird.
No, it's...
There's a couple
elemental spell bonus ones.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, which is Draconic. That's actually huge for playstyle if you are trying to be a blaster. Because that's going to come up every single turn. 5 versus 4 versus 3 extra damage.
Not exactly
Warlock, but...
to finish up this whatever/clockwork build, I really, from a flavor perspective, would love the idea of it being this, you know, extremely lawful character, but like their dedication to efficacy has caused them to be suffused with order and all that, but have like a moment where they're forging something and they hit their hammer in the exact right way for like the 10,000th time, and it basically pops up like one of those old style internet banners that's like, you've done something lawful and order filled for the 10,000th time. Oh boy, I lost it. There we go. Anyways, click here to claim your restore balance feature, and just as cheesy as possible.
Right. Or the other way around, their like they just have a heap of metal and they're the Clockwork Sorcerer and they're hammering a thing, you know, let me like shape this into something neat, and all of a sudden poof, a steel defender pops out of it.
Like,
they just like imbue their magic into it. But I guess I'm an artificer now.
As it normally goes.
Yeah.
And then the thing just can't really be in combat for, you know, 2 more levels.
Oh yeah, you can only get that till 3rd.
Yeah. Well, fine. I like
it. It's not a good dip. Well, it's the worst dip in the game.
Artificer 1 level dip is the worst dip in the game.
Unless you're a wizard, yes.
Yeah. You know, it's dipping for armor, which, as discussed, there are much easier ways to get armor proficiencies.
For sorcerer, yes.
For just about any class.
Yeah. We've already done Artificer Wizard, and I stand by that one. Wizard going 1 level into Artificer, they do not slow down their spell progressions, and they get medium armor.
Yep.
And they're already going to have the intelligence and simple weapons and shields. And
yeah, no, I'm with it. That great? That's good.
Sure. Easy.
Do you have any other builds? I've got some builds.
Oh, just to round out the what requires intelligence. The Alchemist at 5th, they get the thing where if they do fire, necrotic, poison, acid, etc. damage, they could add their intelligence modifier to it.
And what's the Artillerist one?
That was the Force Ballistone, requiring a spell attack, or the Flamethrower requiring... Oh, you mean their 5th level?
Yes, their 5th level.
The Arcane Firearm?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can turn a wand into this magical Arcane Firearm.
They get an extra D8 in damage on their cantrips.
Yeah.
That's it. So that one doesn't matter for intelligence.
On your Artificer spells, though.
Yes.
So it's kind of limited there. Yeah, I've also noticed basically everything... that will do something like that in the Artificer where it impacts spells in a certain way or whatever, it is always specifically called out as when you use your Artificer focus to cast your Artificer spells.
Yeah, and that's...
So it doesn't combine well.
That's why the more I look at it, like, I almost find it hard to justify doing an Artificer dip. It's just because, like, anything that they get is so...
You almost find that difficult?
I still think there's something
with it.
Possibly a 3rd level. I'm actually souring on the 3 level dip to armorer just because all you're getting is heavy at that point and not needing strength requirements, which is, I mean, not nothing,
but
those attacks, you're not going to use it. If you're mainly a sorcerer, you're not going to be punching things with your thunder gauntlets and making them attack you. You still have just a D6 hit dice.
Yeah. No, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah. There's a couple infusions that require or rely on intelligence. Like, getting a homunculus could be nice, that you could do that at level 2. But, like, it's hit points is 1 plus your intelligence modifier plus your artificer level. And it's like, if you take a 2-level dip and you have 13 intelligence, that's what, 4 health?
Woohoo!
There's another spell that lets you do that. It's pretty fun.
Fine familiar. Sorcerers don't get fine familiar, though, I don't think.
No, but they do get the ability to get fine familiar through the spell initiator or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you start coming down to, all right, do I take a feat or do I take a 2-level dip? And get some other stuff along the way.
Now, every time I've envisioned going the armorer route with sorcerer, every time, I just looked it up this morning, so it's been like an hour of me thinking about this. The infiltrator is the only one that makes sense to me. Because you're right, the guardian, you're not getting that much temp HP. You're not using your attacks at all. But the infiltrator, you at least get plus five feet to your speed, which is something. And then you get the dampening field, so advantage on stealth checks. That is just, again, kind of in addition to the heavy armor proficiency. And I guess the quick on and off of your armor, which is always nice.
Sure.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, I'd almost argue just more for that 2-level, though. Get your infusions and then don't waste another level if you're a sorcerer.
But you already had to give up all of your stats for this weird thing to work, so you're not going to have a high dex. The medium armor is not going to do that much. Unless you're 14.
What if you roll 18s across the board, and every time you roll hit points on your sorcerer levels, it was a 6. So you're just out of control.
Yeah, I mean, the artificer going into armor can just add three levels. It adds a bit of beefiness to the sorcerer. Whether or not that's necessary or particularly good, I don't know, but it's something, and I could see why you'd want to do that. And if you comboed that infiltrator armor with the shadow sorcerer, then it is a pretty cool flavor mix.
Okay, I can see that. The kind of, yeah, you're in shadowy and darkness. And
yeah.
You an armory, darkness. And and you facilitate the passage in your special armor.
Here it is. You died, and your armor is the only thing keeping you alive. It's like your life support machine. And through that near-death experience, you gained sorcerer powers, I guess.
Darth Vader was a sorcerer artificer multiclass.
Wait, actually.
Unironically, kind of, yeah.
Maybe onto something there.
Yeah, no, I'm totally right. Did we just savage this?
I think we just saved this episode. Maybe we kept you around for something.
I don't know if he would have been shadow magic, though. But, you know.
Are you serious?
I don't. Yeah, I've watched Star Wars like once, man.
Okay. Shadows. Dark side.
Oh, okay.
How is it not coming together for you?
Yeah, they draw the power from the Shadowfell. Draw from the dark side of the Force. Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically there. The only thing that gets a little weird is the extreme proficiency with the melee weapon, the lightsaber. So I guess you need
that's
to go. Yeah, because that's a wonky
problem with the crossover universe thing. Yeah.
Yes. So what do shadow magic sorcerers get?
Their biggest thing is they need to get to third level, because that's when they can use their meta magic to cast darkness and see through the darkness.
Yes, two sorcery points to cast darkness. You can see it. Also, I mean, they get dark vision out to 120 feet, which if you don't have, that's nice.
Right.
And what's the strength of it? It's been so long since I've looked at this. Oh, yeah. When damage reduces you to 0, you can make a charisma saving throw, which would DC 5 plus damage taken. On a success, you instead drop to 1.
Yeah, that'd be like a, you know, if you're lucky, you get that. The issue is if you were to take... That's really nice when your shadow sorcerer just straight through, because obviously you have charisma going up, but you're also proficient in charisma saving throws. If you start with artificer, you're not going to be proficient, and you're going to have bad charisma, so that might be a tough sell. This one I'd actually do the 3-dip into artificer, though, so I would probably have the charisma up, low intelligence, because you don't need the high intelligence just to wear heavy armor and get all the infiltrator benefits. And you'd still only have 2 infusions. But those infusions could be like the arc. Well, this is regardless of the subclass mix, but that would be like the arcane, enhanced arcane, what is it? Focus. Yes, enhanced arcane focus, where you can just get +1 to any attack rolls, spell attack rolls. So you can make that for yourself, which is super nice.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely some good infusions. The mind sharpener, where you get the 4 charges and expend 1 to succeed on a concentration check.
Yes.
Replicate magic items. Just, you know, kind of pull out of there whatever you need.
Yeah. And so then if you were to continue going with the shadow sorcerer, Hound of Ill Omen is pretty good, though I view that as a really outdated class ability, because I feel like if that came out now, it would be different. As it is written right now, you have to expend, I think, 3 sorcery points in order to make this Hound of Ill Omen, and then it can only attack one creature, it can make opportunity attacks against that creature, and otherwise it just is like a dire wolf with a little bit more temp HP. Super not that great. I feel like if this came out now, it would be one of those abilities where you can use it once for free, and then you start using sorcery points. And it just seems like, just I look at that stuff now, stuff that came out, what, 2-3 years ago? That was in Xanathar's. And it just feels so outdated, not like having that little tidbit in there.
Right. They ripped this out of the Hexblade Unearthed Arcana.
Yeah, I remember
so
that.
So it's never been like a particularly coherent little feature. But you're right. There's no, the proficiency bonuses, the once for free, it's all very, very good stuff. And it's good for multiclassing. So that's, I mean, that's why like Clockwork Soul comes up and it's like, wow, that is an okay dip because they right. made some cool features for multiclassing.
Right.
Shadow Magic, too old.
Yeah. So I almost, like, I'm not saying I'm going to do this or allow it, but it's like, I see stuff like this and I almost want to toy with it at like an actual play and just be like, yeah, you get that for free once per day. Because like it's that's just, I know that that's balanced. Look at everything else that we're seeing now. That's balanced. It's fine. Give it to them once per day. Stop sucking out the sorcery points from sorcerers. Let them have fun.
I was going to say, 3 is a lot.
It's a ton.
Yeah. Yeah, also, this doesn't scale great because it's just, it is always permanently the stats of a dire wolf. Like, yeah. I don't think it goes up at all.
Just
at
based
any point, nothing.
Temp HP based on your sorcerer level. That's not
right.
Much.
Yeah, this also needs one of those newfangled stat blocks where it has like a plug and play thing where it's the health is this plus your sorcerer level plus your charisma, and the attack is, you know, a d6 plus your proficiency bonus plus your charisma, that sort of thing.
My bigger issue around the Hound of Ill Omen is the fact that it can only attack, because if I could just, because its major benefit, regardless of attacks it's doing, is the fact that if it's within 5 feet of that target, it gets disadvantage on all of your spell saves. That's the major benefit.
Oh,
but you
yeah,
can't even dodge
nice.
With it. I can't take the dodge action, so it's just going to die.
Right.
So like little stuff like that is just like, what were they thinking? And it's easy to say now, because again, we're looking at this new design, which I think is a whole lot better. But as I look back, as you said, Will, it's always been a little bit awkward, but it's just be made even more glaring now.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea. Spooky shadow wolf that follows things around and like
right.
curses them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in practice, it's hemorrhage your sorcery points for a non-scaling dire wolf.
They can only do really one thing. The disadvantage on saving throws is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why, again, just like, if it could dodge and just kind of sit there and, like, not immediately die, then I love it. Might be
right,
enough
yeah.
still.
Yeah, 14 AC.
Right. Say, even having it there just for one turn might be enough to get the spell off that you need. You know, you need to right. give them disadvantage against banishment. They've been banished. You don't really care if that direwolf's around
but,
anymore.
Well, you know what you could do? Spend 3 sorcery points on the heightened spell metamagic to give disadvantage on
that's
your spell.
That's only one try, though. Where this,
yeah, but you were saying it.
Yes,
would,
yes, yes, yes.
But I guess it would also absorb a hit for you then.
Yeah. So this is better than that metamagic, and you probably don't need to take that metamagic if you are a shadow sorcerer.
Yeah. So other subclasses here, I like the idea of storm sorcery with the armor artificer. Because, yeah, like, the armor is dealing lightning damage. And
yeah.
I just kind of, like, picture their suits are sparking and all yep. that sort of crap. And then Storm Sorcery deals a lot of lightning damage and thunder damage. And I think that could be kind of cool. But there's not a lot of mechanical synergy.
No.
It's just, like, cool in flavor. And that's it. I was, like, really hoping and looking through it. And anything that's dealing with lightning damage, it's when you cast a spell. And, like, your thunder gauntlets and chest cannon are not.
Yeah.
Spells. The tempestuous magic, if I'm saying that right, at first level you get is where immediately after you cast a spell of first level or higher, you get a fly speed of 10 feet and you don't provoke opportunity attacks with it. And like that's kind of nice, but again, it doesn't really fit well with the playstyle of like the guardian armorer who's going to be like in there. I can see like they punch something and the blast of air shoots them back out of danger. It's like, oh, that could be really cool, but they're not casting spells. So it's a neat flavor.
I had these.
Oh, and you could speak, read, and write Primordial. So
never mind. Yeah. Bringing it back around. I had the exact same thought with the Artillerist and the Storm Sorcerer. But let's be like, Lightning Artificer, kind of that same deal. And for that, you'd have to change the Flamethrower to lightning damage. Like, keep it all the same. Just get rid of the fire, make it lightning. Yes, I know that there are other implications to that, but I like it just flavor-wise, and you get a little tickle cannon like Winston in Overwatch, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, just reflavor the Force Battle stuff from Force to Lightning as well.
Sure.
It would actively be a downgrade, actually. Yes. I think there's more resistance to Lightning than Force, but...
Yeah, definitely. And overall, as you said, mechanically, it just doesn't work. It's not good, but it kind of, like, it sounds cool. Mechanical, electric, you put them together, it should be good, right?
Right. And then there's my favorite sorcerer go-to dip, Wild Magic.
Ah, see, I didn't even look into this because I knew you'd bring something.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super great here if you're just going like one or two levels into sorcerer, because it's all comes off of when you cast a sorcerer spell.
Right.
That being said, like, it doesn't track spell slots, so it could be you have a known sorcerer spell, but then you're casting a lot more than you could because you're using your slots from Artificer. That would still do it. So as long as it's just a spell that is on Artificer or Sorcerer list, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Would it work that way? I think not, actually. I think it would have to be a spell you choose from the Sorcerer spell casting feature, which means when you get a first level.
Yeah, you'd have to keep them separate.
Yeah, you'd have to track them separate, so that's kind of a pain in the ass. But
so, like, if Shield was on both, and you took Shield as an Artificer spell, not a Sorcerer one,
right?
Using Shield wouldn't count for it.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know if this would come up a crazy amount, but you could try and pick a spell, like, though I don't think Sorcerers get Shield. I'm not 100% sure on that, though.
I was taking a guess.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, a spell that will come up a lot. And then also get the Tides of Chaos, where they could give themselves advantage once per long rest, and basically anything they want, or they cast a sorcerer spell and then roll on the table and it comes back. That's always just kind of fun stuff to have to play around with. I wouldn't go just one level for it unless you're just chasing the character concept because it's neat, which I totally get.
Yeah.
I did that with a bard at like 14th level, I think.
But once again,
and then it almost never came up.
A little bit easier to justify mechanically.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, sorcerers do get Shield.
Neat. There you go. So have them pick Shield, because that's going to be used a lot. Shield is just one of those spells that comes up.
But only the Artillerist and Battlesmith Artificers get Shield.
Okay.
This doesn't really matter, though. Yeah. Yes, you're right. I like Wild Magic Sorcerer just for a flavor dip alone. And if you can make it work, great. And then you get Tides of Chaos. Great. It's sure, good. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And it's always an exciting time when you get to roll on the table.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it.
I love when my pants turn blue. I know, it's skin turn blue.
Yeah.
Unless you have the D1000 table.
10,000.
10,000.
We've talked about to death on previous Sorcerer episodes, so...
Yeah, I think that's really all of the combos that made sense to me, though.
Yeah. Draconic Sorcerer, the Draconic Bloodline. Like, I mean, the first level ability is not bad for anybody, really, where you get the, your hit bar maximum increases by one. I guess that's per level in Sorcerer class, though, so that's really going to super drop off. And then AC is 13 plus dex, so you need dex. Yeah, never mind.
That's medium armor.
Yep. Yeah, I take that back.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Then, yeah, not until 6 do you get anything worthwhile with the elemental affinity of adding charisma onto. Yeah, and it's specifically spells. So, like, yeah, artificers get a lot of way to do elemental damage without casting a spell. And the elemental affinity is when you cast a spell. It's not just when you deal damage of that type. So, not a lot of good synergy there.
I think the only other point that I would make, and this is just slightly in favor of the multi-class in general, is that sorcerers don't have anything taking up their bonus action, and both the Artillerist and the Battlesmith, which I probably wouldn't do regardless, but those get something consistently to do with your bonus action. So even if they're not the strongest, like, you know, your artillery isn't going to be the best in, compared to just going a full artificer, it's still something to do with your bonus action, and extra damage is extra damage. Or even if you're just doing the temp HP that you get from the protector cannon, it's still free temp HP that you weren't getting right. otherwise.
Right. And yeah, even if your intelligence is just plus one at the 13, I mean, it's still a D8 plus one. Right. So it's not bad at all.
Right.
That's still pretty solid. Yeah. In terms of role playing, is there anything here that really excites you?
You know how I feel about sorcerers.
Yeah, I could see a sorcerer where they kind of been gifted their magic powers and they feel like, you know what, I think maybe if I could just do this innately, imagine if I worked at it. But they kind of like already had a hobby and an interest in the mechanical and all that. And so instead of going wizard, they go artificer and they kind of enhance themselves that way. Kind of adds that sort of agency and choice to a class that doesn't really have that built in.
Yeah. The only way that it's interesting to me is utilizing what I have leaned heavily into, and that's the ability to choose to be a sorcerer through, like, rituals and such. The mm-hmm. idea of an artificer trying to modify themselves and imbue their bodies with arcane energy, yep. That's cool.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Another cool way to handle it.
I just keep thinking about Anakin Skywalker, man.
That's what you've been thinking about the last 20 minutes, Will?
Yeah. Yeah, you're just sitting there at Tatooine being an artificer. And you're like, yeah, this is great. And then some sorcerers show up.
Oh, my God, he really was. Yeah, he built droids and shit? Holy crap.
Yeah. It fits too well. Innate sorcerer's power.
That's perfect.
What? I do?
There you go. Kevin, you just got our YouTube clickbait title. Just making Anakin Skywalker?
Right.
And you can just take my face doing doing that. Yeah.
The only thing that I can see that may work a little better is the Blaine singing wizard instead of sorcerer.
Nah.
Because you still have that Kevin. Kind of proficiency with weapons. And it's like, even though he had the innate force ability, he still had to train for it. Like, Jedi's...
That's sorcerers train. In general, though.
Midichlorians, yeah. Dude.
Yeah. You have to be born with it, and then you can train it. That's like the concept of sorcerers is you're born with it.
Right, and then you have grown power. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it does work super well.
It's really good. It's
so good!
I mean, and what's not? It's like you're going to be so underwhelmed if you come into your table playing, I'm being Darth Vader. And it's like, damn, no, this like that badass image in mind. Especially like the Darth Vader at the end of Rogue One when they kind of recreate the opening to A New Hope. Where you're...
Sure.
Yeah, it's...
You lost me.
It's a really badass scene, but whatever. It like really, really shows the power of like Darth Vader that you don't get it so much in the originals. And then you're... You know, everything we just talked about with all its pitfalls and kind of lackluster abilities, and you're not really going to be smacking things with a sword or anything.
If you want to nerf it even more, just into oblivion, you just go aberrant mind, because force, telekinesis, they're basically the same thing.
Oh, jeez.
And you're just really excited. You come to the table. You want to play Darth Vader. Right. Your DM made it for you. You said, I want to play Darth Vader. Well, here it is.
Right. Right. And get to sixth in Artificer and give yourself the Radiant Weapon Infusion.
There you go. There you go.
It's all coming together.
I hate when that happens, though. When it's like, oh, yeah, here is like, I mean, that's a legitimately cool concept. Obviously, people like Darth Vader as a character. But sorry, it does not work in D&D here.
Yeah, make up your own shit, guys. Everybody in the community, just make your own stuff up. Just completely. Do not try and make these formulas work because they're just.
Right. I know you're like saying it holes. Somewhat facetiously, but that is a good point. A lot of times people have the idea of, like, oh, I want to make this well-established, powerful character from some other thing. And it usually just doesn't work out well. It's always, in my mind, always ends up feeling a little disappointing because you're sacrificing stuff and things aren't quite right. And especially if you're making like a superhero who's like the hero of their own movies and comics, it's like you're not going to match that power level in here. Like, you have to be on par with the rest of your party.
I guess it depends on how rooted in reality you are. If you think, I want to use that character as an influence and have aspects of them in my character.
Yes.
And like, yes, I want to see some of their abilities manifested, but to me, their character as a whole and the way they act is more important. Yes, you can do it. But yeah, you're right. When it's like a level 20 build that will make Captain America, it's like this. It's dumb.
It's not going to feel right. Yeah, no, influences from other characters. Absolutely. I mean, that's almost impossible to not do.
Oh, not me. I've never once been influenced by anything.
Right, yeah.
It's like, watch another anime and rip a plot off for you guys to go into.
Right? Oh, I know. It's just anime episodes.
Every single one.
It's not true. That's not true.
That's not true. I could find an anime that literally details the entire plot of our campaign.
I would actually be impressed.
Give me a little bit.
Sounds like a good anime. Must be some smart writers. And you know what else is smart? Making sure to use the discount code MM10 when you purchase dice from our affiliates, Metallic Dice Games. You can get yourself some of the prettiest looking dice. Kevin, would you put an image up of their dice?
Yeah,
right around.
Sure, yeah.
There, thank you. Yeah. And
that's over your face. Was that what that was?
Care.
Right here over my face.
People don't come for my face. They come for the dice, Kevin.
Right.
So you can use our code MM10 and get 10% off your entire order and get yourself some awesome dice. So that is it for our Artificer Sorcerer discussion. If you have anything that you want to add, make sure to let us know. You can find us on Twitter at @monster_multi or on our subreddit, our Monsters and Multiclass. And be sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And they let you, which is like just Podchasers and iTunes for some reason. And thank you so much, as always, to our wonderful Patreon subscribers. We have Isaac M., Wall2200, Star Shinobi, Sentinel D20, Adam A., and Joe Perry. You all are wonderful. And if you want to be a Patreon subscriber, you can go to monstersmulticlass.com/support. And you can also see all of our lovely affiliates. And get some sick Monsters Multiclass merch. Let's move on to our next segment. All right. So first thing that we're going to be talking about is the optional class features for the wizard in Tasha's. Not a ton here that's been changed. It lists out all of the spells that have been added, I think from Xanathar's and from Tasha's, but that's not really that important. We've talked about the spells on our spell episode, which Kevin can put somewhere around here.
Yeah.
I did the finger thing, that way they know. So yeah. the only change that is important is the cantrip formulas. So this basically allows wizards to change out cantrips, or at least a cantrip, on a long rest. This is, again, an optional feature that that can be added to your game, which I think is at least worth discussing a little bit, because cantrips are very solid and in what you choose. It's not like with spells, where you can just find a spell scroll, learn a new spell. Cantrips, you know the amount that you know, and that's basically it.
Yeah, this to me kind of falls in the same vein as all of the other versatility features they've added. Basically every class has some form of this now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have it official, but I mean, let's be honest, if you're a main DM, Jared, if someone's playing a wizard and said, hey, I kind of feel like I screwed up on some of my cantrip choices, is it cool if I swap some out at the next level up?
Not every long rest.
Oh, it's per long rest?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
This is big.
Okay, now I feel dumb.
And it
okay.
fits the wizard. I've always thought that the wizard should have more versatility than they do.
Right.
Getting stuck with five forever is insane. Getting this is... This is the kind of thing where you could be in a certain dungeon, or you'll know you'll be there, and replace Firebolt with something that doesn't do fire damage because you know it's not going to work.
Right.
For sure. I don't know how I completely missed that, and you just said it. I was clearly not paying close attention to the words you were saying, I guess.
I don't really listen to me either, so that's fine.
Okay, yeah. Switching out on a long rest. Man, I totally misread this one. That is crazy. That is huge. I love that sort of versatility.
Yeah, it
added. Yeah,
differentiates the wizard in a way that in some ways is getting lost along the way as more classes and different ways to get spells and stuff come out. This is like another way to solidify that they are the spellcaster and they're going to stay the best. And I love that. It's a bit of power creep, but I think it's in a healthy direction.
Right. Yeah, more just the versatility of it. Right. In fact, it's just one cantrip, not like their entire list could be read on every long rest. And yeah, it fits perfectly with what they go for, the spell casting, their big thing. They're the only one who has a spell book of spells known who they then prepare from, and they can just keep adding to it,
right,
given that idea of they're supposed to prepare for the day. Except for cantrips, where this is like, because that's just how cantrips work. It's just for whatever reason, those really simple spells that they're just innately known, that they just have memorized, now they can't swap them.
Ooh, that's actually my favorite part of this, is we get to shut down that conversation. Everyone says, oh, cantrips are like, they're more like muscle memory, you know? So you just like, you can only learn new ones, and swapping them around, it's just, that whole dichotomy just gone. It's just, their preparation too. It's just, you can only switch out one per day.
Right.
It keeps it all in line. It makes just more sense for the wizard. So, yeah, love this change.
Yes.
And that's it for the optional features. Again, really short, but I think, again, worth talking about. Next is the Bladesinger. So, this is not a new subclass by any means. This was actually in one of the oldest books that added subclasses, the Sword Coast Adventure Guide. You may not know about it because Wizards of the Coast is currently out back hitting it with a shovel, hoping that it stays down. But what they did is made a couple of changes and threw it into Tasha's just to get it up to speed. And one of which is they removed the requirement that it was for elves only. Which is just, again, removing it from whatever flavor they set in the Sword Coast Adventure Guide. I don't remember.
Right. Yeah, that, well, the flavor was, it was for elves.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Even though in there they had a line where it's saying, if your DM agrees that it doesn't make sense for your setting, anyone else could take it. So it's, that's a pretty minor thing, just opening it up.
Yep. The next thing is that they changed how many blade songs you get. It used to be that you would get 2 per short rest. Now it is up to your proficiency bonus per long rest. So that's different.
That's when, like, early on, it actually kind of feels like a nerf. And my understanding is they were trying to boost this subclass because it's a kind of very unique take on the wizard, and it had complaints of not being crazy strong. I felt like 2 per short rest was okay.
Yeah.
Like, you had a lot of short rest in an adventuring day. Up to your proficiency bonus per long rest, like right away at second level, you're going to be able to do this twice per long rest.
Yeah.
And that feels really, really limiting.
Yeah. Now, that said, how many times do you think an adventuring party normal table has more than 2 combat encounters per long rest before 5th level? So basically, I know I just threw a whole bunch of numbers around, but in a low level campaign, it's not that often that you're getting into a bunch of different fights between having a long rest. Because your health isn't going to last that long. Your spells aren't going to last that long. You get 2 combats into a day, and you're basically done as it is. So I think it might come up a little bit in some unique scenarios where you don't have the blade song. But realistically, you get 3 at 5th level, because that's when your proficiency bonus goes up. Unless I'm wrong. And that's 5th level, right?
That's correct, yeah. Okay. And then 4 and 9th.
Yeah. So I feel like, realistically, this isn't going to change anything. Because you almost never have more than 2 fights between short rests. Like, just about never. So that means you always have it. And when we're talking about low-tier play, you almost never have more than, again, 2 per long rest. So I don't know. I can't say with confidence one way or the other because it really does depend on the table, but I get the gut feeling that you're still going to be able to use this every single combat encounter and not really worry about it.
Yeah, it just limits it in a different way. Yep. I'm not sure why they made the change. I guess just to give it a sense of scaling. That's the only thing I could think of, because otherwise it was just super short and that was it.
I would say to fit with the general idea that wizards aren't short rest based, they're long rest based.
Yeah.
But they still get arcane recovery.
It looked like a warlock. That's what warlocks do. It's like, right, use your spells, short rest. This is more wizard flavored.
Yeah.
And I think if you drew this in like multiple graphs, you'd see them kind of like going back and forth every couple of levels, but it's really not right. that different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
Right. Okay. And then the actual big change.
Yes. You can replace an extra attack with a cantrip. So at 6th level, you get extra attack with the Bladesong. I think you have to be in your Bladesong, but I don't have the exact... Nope. No, you do not? Okay, so you get extra attack, not. And you can, again, replace one of those attacks with a cantrip, which means that Gishes are saved.
Yeah, there's a lot of shenanigans. So, like, yeah, your favorite, Jaren, you could cast Booming Blade.
Why would you say that name? And
also
here?
Get an attack.
I told you, we're not talking about Booming Blade anymore. Sorry, go ahead.
Booming. No, that was the gist of it. That is actually pretty crazy strong. Because the Booming Blade, I mean, it's going to go up in character level, regardless, even if you're multi-class out of this or whatever. And it's kind of the trade-off of Booming Blade is it's just one cast. One attack. It's an action to do this cantrip as part of casting the cantrip. You make an attack, the attack hits, and then it locks them down and does some extra D8 damage as you get higher in level. And then that was supposed to be it. Now you can still do two attacks, and one of them is a souped up Booming Blade.
Yep.
Yep. It's pretty strong. Or like, yeah, do Green Flame Blade to do some AoEs, or do a Toll to Dead and then an attack.
Which, now, that alone, Eldritch Knights can do at 7th level. They get the ability to cast a cantrip and make an attack immediately after. Though this is phrased a little bit differently, where this is replacing one of the extra attacks. I don't know how much that wording changes things, but it is at least a little bit different.
Yeah, War Magic, beginning at 7th, when you use your action to cast a cantrip, you can make one weapon attack as a bonus action.
Oh, as a bonus action.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's pretty important.
So, yeah. Yeah, so this is better.
Yeah.
That's why it's different. Okay.
And that's great. I mean, wizards should be better at martial abilities than Eldritch Knights.
They're better at spells.
Why would a fighter
be better casting spells? And you said this when we first read this, we were talking in our little group chat, and you said it has sarcastically about that. And it's, I mean, keep in mind, they still have D6 hit dice. They can only wear light armor. They can't use shields. They get a proficiency in exactly one-handed weapon.
Yep.
I mean, it's still pretty limited.
Right. Because
they don't get Action Surge. They don't get Second Wind.
Because that attack from the Bladesinger is going to be a short sword. That attack from an Eldritch Knight can be a battle axe. And you know, has a D12 right. damage roll, plus great weapon fighting and all of those add-ons.
Right, yeah.
So, yes.
So I think this is a nice needed boost, and it really makes the Blade Singing feel like a wizard melee character. I think it bridges that well. Otherwise, it felt a little lackluster before this.
Before, it was one or the other. This is now allowing right. you to have that mix.
Right. Or before Blade Singing was saved by multiclassing. We went to that a lot when we did wizard multiclasses. We would look at, oh, we can do Blade Singing with this, and that becomes neat. But I would never want to just play a straight Blade Singing wizard until now. Because I love Booming Blade, and I love how much Jared hates it, and I want to be able to do it every single turn and attack. So I'll probably go to 6th Blade Singing and then dump the rest in Fighter so I could still do Great Weapon Master and the two-handed and...
Kevin! Oh, no,
I would lose my ability to do Blade Song doing that.
Yeah.
And then I have to worry about Ontology. It probably wouldn't be great, but...
No. No, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Believe me, Kevin, you will always find a way to make a character that I despise. So don't put all your chips into the Blade Singing class. Right.
Kevin's custom Blade Singing class, Blade Booming. It's all about Booming Blade.
Well, you take one or a couple other levels into Bard just to get Dissonant Whispers that makes them run away.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, didn't we conclude that does not actually trigger Booming Blade or something?
I don't remember the conclusion. Really, and I remember
we went back and forth for a while.
The conversation bothered me. I remember that. But we did land on it. Yes.
It's a bad damage. Spell that makes the game worse.
Booming Blade? Booming yes. Blade? We all agreed on that. Yes.
I didn't agree on that. I love Booming Blade.
I know that you like making the game worse for every single person except for you. Kevin Odie, hater of other people.
Oh, yeah, with the booming blade, it has the line, if the target willingly moves 5 feet or more, then it takes the thunder damage. And I think it was determined dissonant whispers is not so much a willing thing. But it still triggers opportunity attacks, because if they moved using their reaction, movement, action, bonus action, it triggers an opportunity attack. But willingly, they are not. That's what
and it's still good, because they're still boomed, so they have to go run away, and then they're stuck over there.
Oh yeah, that was the cool
which combination. Saved it.
Yeah, because it doesn't just end.
Yeah,
it never ends.
God, that spell's so
you just use it next turn because it's a cantrip,
right?
I love how we just can't not talk about it. It's impossible every time it comes up
to not hate on Booming Blade.
Yeah.
What I hate about Booming Blade is it's almost impossible to talk about anything without being like, yeah, you should shoehorn Booming Blade in here somehow.
Right.
Oh, right. You're making any kind of melee attack and you have the capacity for magic? Yeah, you're going to need a Booming Blade.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Never gets old. All right, so Order of Scribes. This is a new, brand new subclass, and I think it was actually... correct me if I'm wrong, heavily changed from any Unearthed Arcana, or there were no UAs with this, because I feel like I don't remember this in its form at all.
Yeah, I don't remember. I didn't specifically look that up.
Me either. But okay.
I do not remember it either.
So this is a real wizard's wizard, as I would really think of it. It's a whole class dedicated to books, but it's a wizard that's already dedicated to books, so...
Right.
Books.
I don't like it. I don't like the flavor. I am really disappointed in this one.
See, I disagree, because I don't like the fact that wizards always have to be... I won't say shoehorned, but they have to have a school focus. I like that this one is just, like, wizard. It's your most base wizard. In the same way that I almost want a bard that's just like, hey... you like music. You weave music. And we don't have anything for that. So it's like...
Warlock, whose patron is warlocks.
No, and they definitely really got away from the schools of magic with Wizard. I mean, that's obviously the original.
Sure,
but then you got like War Magic, Blade Singing.
That's just more combat-based ones. So I don't just want that. That doesn't help me.
In Jared's defense, it's... hitting stuff with weapons, and then new schools, and then now Order of Scribes.
Yeah. So this, yeah. And like, you know, where Paladin has Oath of Devotion, and that feels like you're straight-laced, that is a Paladin. I feel like that's where this fits in, is it takes away any of that, oh, well, I like evocation spells. It's just like, no, I want to be a wizard, and I want to be the wizard. So I like that, I guess. But it's allowed to not be interesting to you.
That's, yeah.
I mean...
yeah, it's not interesting. Because like then its real main flavor is you put a conscious energy, like a conscious arcane energy into your spellbook. And then that manifests and like help you out as your little buddy. And it just... I don't know. It's one of those that's just not clicking with me. Like Psionics doesn't click with you. This just feels kind of weird. I don't feel like the mechanics, which we'll obviously dive into here shortly, really meshes well with that flavor. It just, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of, it almost feels like it's trying to like shoehorn in like that Disney character sidekick of your quirky, goofy spellbook, which now has a voice and talks and
I don't know,
like a butler from Victorian England.
Right. And it's like, I guess that could be fun. I don't know.
Well, its first ability is Wizardly Quill. And for this, again, second level, as a bonus action, you can magically create a tiny quill in your free hand. The magic quill has the following properties. It doesn't require ink, and when you write with it, it produces ink in any color of your choice. Ooh.
Game breaking.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if anybody does not play a character that is not taking a 2-level dip into wizard for that, what the fuck are you doing?
Why are all of your notes in green ink? Because I can.
I love those pens when I was a kid, though.
You're like, oh, look at all these different colors. Color. Yeah. Red?
Or the ones where like the single tube of ink was a rainbow, so it changed as you wrote.
I never had one of
those. Oh, those were bad.
Yeah. I feel like by the end it would just hard be brown.
No, it worked well. I don't know how it worked, but it was just very hard to read.
Yeah. All right. Then next is the time you must spend to copy a spell into your spell book equals 2 minutes per spell level if you use the quill for the transcription. Kind of just a flavor thing.
Yeah. Usually when it comes to, I think, copying into a spell book, money is the main limiting factor, not so much time.
Right. Like, it does take time, and it's a couple hours, and this means it's faster. So, yeah.
A lot faster.
A lot. But this is, again, just really supposed to be flavor.
Yeah.
Next, you can erase anything you write with the quill if you wave the feather over the text as a bonus action, provided the text is within 5 feet of you. So, if you need to erase some text in the middle of combat, you know exactly where it falls in your turn order.
Right. Clearly, purely ribbon fluff. But right away, though, when we're talking about the mechanics not meshing with this, like, I don't... Like, when I read this, where they, like, they've infused their spellbook with a sentient life, and then the first thing they get is a quill that kind of works like an erasable pen. Like, I don't see the connection. It just seems like kind of this weird. It's like, wouldn't they get a quill?
Their whole thing isn't just that they infuse their book with life. It's that they are, like, they really like books. They really like books and writing. That's the flavor of this class. It has, you get a little floating spell book. That doesn't matter. You really like books. And because you like books so much, you learn how to make them people.
and get a fancy quill.
Yeah, and get a fancy quill.
Yeah.
Next is the Awaken spellbook. So, using specially prepared inks and ancient incantations.
This is also at second level, should be said. You get more than just the quill at second level.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a bad...
Still comparable to some other wizard second level dips, though. they're not all winners.
No, they're not. They're not.
Anyways, you have awakened an arcane sentience within your spellbook. While you are holding the book, it grants you the following benefits. You can use the book as a spellcasting focus for your wizard spells, which, let's talk about these one at a time. That's easier. I like that. I know it's just flavor, but this is the first time that as a wizard, you can use your book as your focus. And like,
right.
How is that not
just
a thing?
That does just make so much sense. Right. Like, I never thought about it before because it's just how I always pictured it, but kind of nuts where it's like, I guess you can.
Yeah. Nope. Sorry. You need a crystal.
Picture them.
You need to make sure
I can't like have my book up and like have the page open for reference. And nope.
Only if you're an Order of the Scribes wizard, right?
I guess
how many
maybe
years that you couldn't do that, and now you can.
I guess maybe the idea is you don't need to reference it because that's what preparation is: memorizing what's there.
Sure, and it's not as much about the reference as it is, you know, again, where the magic comes from, because usually as a wizard, you've got a wand or a staff or whatever, and you're pointing in that direction. This person's just holding their book, which is a cool image, but again, makes no other difference.
Right. I'm getting a kind of evangelical Bible thumper vibes from that, actually. That could be an interesting way to play the character, meshing with cleric.
Were you doing the Bible smack, Will? Is that what you're going for?
Okay. You hold it up.
Yeah.
Demons.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anyways, next, when you cast a wizard spell with a spell slot, you can temporarily replace its damage type with a type that appears in another spell in your spell book. The latter spell must be of the same level as the spell slot you expend. So if you cast Scorching Ray and you've got Melf's Acid Arrow in your spell book, you can change out the fire damage for acid damage and make it Scorching Acid Ray. Acid Ray.
Is Melf Acid Arrow first level?
I don't remember. Scorching Ray is second level.
Oh, you're right. I think it doesn't matter, but yeah.
I think Melf's is second. But that's the concept. Yeah. I think it's weird that it has to be the same spell level. I feel like...
Yeah, it's
or
just...
Or lower?
It's not a bad idea. And this is one of those mechanical benefits that's fitting with this. They learn how to alter their spells and change the damage in a more booky... I guess that's probably why. To make it a more kind of learned, booky way of doing it versus the sorcerer's way of just being able to do it. Because right. they got the new meta magic options.
Right.
Of being able to, I think, spend a sorcery point and change it. So in a sense, it's kind of worse than that because it's a lot more limiting. Yeah. But
I think it was designed to, that specific thing is to limit what you can do. Because by 10th level, you could do almost any spell at any damage.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Whereas this, right. you are stuck with what you've got.
Yeah. And in a way,
high level, I would actually anticipate you being able to do this in any capacity you want.
Yeah. Really, my issue with this is less about the ability itself and more around, as I've said before, in 5th edition, there's just not that many times where resistance or vulnerability come up, which is a little bit of a problem, in my opinion, and it should be more common. But regardless, if it does come up, you probably have a way of changing up what you have. And, you know, that means right. that you can make any of your spells, like if you have a first level spell and you have Chromatic Orb, boom, all of your first level spells can be changed around to whatever elemental type you want.
I was wondering how that worked.
I don't see why not.
With Chromatic Orb. Because, I mean, Chromatic Orb does not have an inherent damage type. You pick it when you cast. So I don't know if that would apply with this.
Unless I heard otherwise, I'd say yes, because it's just a first level one. If it was like at, you know, a 10th level one, it starts to be, wait, 10th level? There's no 10th level spells. No. What are you talking about?
What do you know, Jared?
I assume that 10th level character.
Yes, if you're a 10th level character, then it is, you're casting, what, 6 level spells? Yeah, that becomes a little different. No, that's still 5th level, isn't it? You get 5th at 9th. Whatever. The point is, I don't care about changing the first level spells to whatever.
And also, how would this work with upcasting? Like Magic Missile is what? Just a first level spell. It's force damage. But you can upcast it at higher levels.
Yeah, I think it has. I'm assuming it means the base. That's what I was gathering from it. Because otherwise, yes, you can make everything force damage.
Yeah. So that can actually be super limiting. Will, you were saying that when you think you can kind of just do whatever you want. It's like, I don't think that's true at all, actually.
No, you can do whatever you want at very high levels by the time that your dungeon master, you bullied him into giving scrolls for all the stuff you want. But up until that point, yes, you'd be limited to like 1 or 2, maybe 3 damage types per level. But like we said before, the wizard gets unlimited spells, at least theoretically. If it's in the wizard book, you know,
right,
I think
right,
that probably covers everything.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be prepared or anything.
Yeah, and really, you don't need it. You don't need to have every option available. Usually, you just need an option that gets around what the obstacle is. So the thing has fire resistance. Well, I still want to use Scorching Ray, but I don't want to cast Scorching Ray. It's resistant to fire. Well, luckily, I've got that snowball spell, so I'll make it cold damage.
Right.
And it just, it allows you to feel better about not preparing everything.
Yeah.
So for that, again, that's a check. That's good. I like that. Yep. It fits the flavor of this class.
Right.
Last part of this, again, still at second level, is when you cast a wizard spell as a ritual, you can use the spell's normal casting time rather than adding 10 minutes to it. Once you use this benefit, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest.
So, I mean, you could always do that with rituals, but it takes a spell slot. So basically, this is one.
And they have to be prepared.
Rituals don't. No, not for wizards.
No, no.
That's their whole
point. If you want to cast it as an action and not as a ritual, it has to be prepared.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. So this is solid. Yeah. Basically, a one free spell slot per long rest. And then, not having to prepare it.
Yeah. And it does get better as you level up because the rituals get better themselves. Something like water breathing is 3rd level, and I think takes your normal 10 minutes to cast. So if you need water breathing absolutely immediately, because you're underwater and you didn't prepare water breathing, then you're going to be super happy you have this.
Right.
I don't have a list of every single ritual spell in front of me, but...
No, that's it.
That's just it, yeah.
It's just water breathing.
Most of them are pretty low level, though.
Right.
So, yeah, as you said, a free spell slot is nice in itself. Detect magic is one. Identify is another. Usually, you have the time to sit around and cast those as a ritual, but if you don't, here you go.
Right.
All right, so that's it for second level, unless there's other thoughts on that.
But, well, there's the last paragraph. You can, it's easier to replace the spellbook if you lose it.
Oh.
And over the course of a short rest by using that wizardly quill, you can write your spells into a blank book. At the end of the rest, your spellbook's consciousness is summoned in the new book, and with that comes all of the spells. So usually, if you lose your wizard spellbook, you are stuck with the spells you already had prepared, and it's a pretty bigger deal to get it back. I don't think you really can get it back. You have to like work out with the DM of like finding it in the world. There's not like a mechanic of relearning those spells, so it's kind of a really, really big deal for the wizard to lose the spellbook. This just takes that away.
Yeah, it's almost such a big deal that I've never seen a DM consider it, unless the person has already prepared a spell book. Because you can make a second spell book. Nothing's preventing you from having your second one, and you'd only lose the spells that you've learned since then if you weren't able to copy them into your backup. So I think that's something that's encouraged, and like you should be, everybody should be backing up their spells, back them up in the cloud, you know? But but realistically, it's just, I don't think it comes up. It's an old school style of DMing that I just don't see.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, it's such a... So this gets around a problem that's such a big deal where people just don't do it.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't it be fun if I just took away... Now, okay, if it was temporary, I could see doing that. And then... How do I put this? Basically, because this ability exists, now I could see using it. You know, like, oh, you get captured, and when you get captured, we take your spell book away. And any other wizard would be like, oh, I'd have the perfect spell for this, but I didn't have it prepared when we got captured, so guess we're shit out of luck. Well, this wizard, they've got a solution.
Right. Assuming that the captors left them the magic erasable pen and a blank book.
Can they make another one? You can, yeah, they magically create the tiny
pens. Oh, you create. Okay, there you go. Sure.
Yeah, so they can do that at least.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's that type of thing where it...
But it has to be a blank book. You still need a blank book.
Yeah, right, which I don't think is too absurd.
Right.
You can make it out of leaves, man.
Sure. Right. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a real...
It's like twine and a string of leaves. And you're like,
that's a real close. Will Meldon spellbook right there.
Yeah, kind of phoning it in.
Did you just make that 5 minutes ago? Yeah. What of it?
it's got the stuff in it. What are you mad about? Like what you were saying, though, is you've got these situations and these features where it's just like... gives the DM temptation to lob the softball, so you're like, oh, look, you solved the problem with the class feature. That's not really... I wouldn't say that's good design.
I'm not saying it is either.
Right, yeah. It's like, so if they were not this type of wizard, the Order of the Scribe, and you had a plan to temporarily take the spellbook as a challenge to overcome, but you knew they were going to get it back so you don't ruin all of their hard work. Great, that's not a problem then. And then if they were Order of the Scribe and you knew they had this, you just wouldn't do that. You just would not introduce that plot device because that there's nothing to overcome. It would just be like, oh, I took your book. It's like, all right, I got it back. It's like, that was fun for everyone.
To some extent, like that's like a different conversation, but there is some benefit to giving a party a win based on like their class features. Like, even though you know they're going to succeed, just because they get to feel cool for a second.
Yeah, and I definitely see that in like combat setting, like teeing up combats where, you know, someone's just going to hit it out of the park because they got the perfect ability for this and make them feel really cool and powerful. With this, like specifically this, I think it would be so transparently obvious what you're doing. It's like, oh, I took your spell book. Oh, wow, you're in trouble now. And then they go, ah, no, I take a short rest and I have it back. It's like, oh, you got me.
Huh.
Like, I just don't see it working out to like make anyone feel cool.
It's not that bad. It is a thing that could happen when you get captured by guards or whatever.
Yeah.
And your party of Eldritch Knights and Orders of Scribes are just like manifesting their stuff in the jail cell. Right. Like, damn. What the hell?
I think I still somewhat disagree because there's still at least some things to overcome because of that blank book where I could see them like they need to now convince a guard to give them a blank book. And why the hell would they do that? So there's like, there's some things sure. in there.
It's
where
it's just getting stretchier. It's like, hey, can I have a blank and large and slightly magical book? It's like, yeah, sure. What's the worst that you could do? Write all your spells in it again?
Right. So I will say overall, yes, it is not so good that it's like, yeah, I'm glad this is a part of the class. It still runs into that issue where it's just probably not going to come up. And if it does, yes, it's going to be a little ham-fisted. Doing that once just because they have the class feature, though, I mean, just it'll be fine. I don't know. If the player's yeah. like that upset about it, I think it's better from a role-playing perspective than a meta perspective. From a role-playing perspective, the character doesn't know that this scenario was made by the DM and that they're in the perfect scenario. So,
sure, yeah.
And like, I don't know. I guess I'm keeping those like totally separate, which isn't fair. There's always the meta aspect of it. But from the like actual in-game perspective, yeah, they're going to be pretty hyped that they can do this really weird niche trick.
Yeah, that's fair.
Ah, well, I promise not to do that to you, Kevin, because you'll never play this class.
Probably not, no.
Next is Manifest Mind. This is their 6th level feature. So with this, you can conjure forth the mind of your awakened spellbook. As a bonus action, while the book is on your person, you can cause the mind to manifest as a tiny spectral object hovering in an unoccupied space of your choice within 60 feet. The spectral mind is intangible, doesn't occupy a space, but it does shed dim light in a 10-foot radius, and it looks like whatever you want it to look like. While manifested, it can see and hear, and it has dark vision out to 60 feet. You can telepathically share info, or at least it can share it with you. You can't share it with it. Whenever you cast a wizard spell on your turn, you can cast it as if it was from the specter. And instead of using your own senses, you can do so a number of times per day equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So that's the first part here. There is still more to this ability. It's a long one. Classic wizard bullshit. As a bonus action, you can cause the spectral mind to hover up to 30 feet to an unoccupied space that you or it can see, and it can pass through creatures but not objects. The spectral mind stops manifesting if it moves 300 feet away, or if somebody casts dispel magic on it, or if your book's destroyed, or if you die, or if you dismiss it. And once you conjure the mind, you can't do so until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of any level to conjure it again. Whew.
So I think the biggest thing of this is the being able to cast through its space.
Why didn't I just say like that?
similar to the Echo Knight's, I could attack through Echo Spaces, so you could cast through this space, which is cool. I think it's not going to come up as much as it may initially seem, but probably the best then further use of that specifically is to increase your range essentially by 60 feet. As a bonus action, you can pop this thing out 60 feet from you and then cast through that space. And so you could essentially add 60 feet of range to all of your spells, which will definitely come up.
Like, yeah,
that's neat.
That's a little bit reductive. Like, you, if you don't have it out, you can do that, but you can just have it out all the time. It makes kind of sense to pop it out 60 feet because it can only move 30. But after that, you can move it around the battlefield. If somebody's hiding, this is actually a great way to get to them.
Right. Like if they're totally behind cover, move it behind them.
Yeah.
And it puts you in zero danger because it has no HP. It can't be targeted. It's an inanimate or not even an object. It is totally intangible.
Right.
So it's like a familiar, but a lot better.
What, just different?
No, it's a lot better.
Well, because a familiar can deliver touch attacks, and then I guess I'm looking at familiar in the sense of someone who's not just a pure caster. I see use out of that where you can, they could do the help action,
right?
Things like that. It could also be more than 300 feet from you, so you could scout with your familiar if you have a flying one. They're just different. Sure, I don't know if I'd even really compare them.
Fair. Have them both. Why not?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think what Will mentioned is a lot of the benefit. I mean, you can just have this thing show up anywhere. The fact that it can go through creatures is nice. It said you can't go through objects. If you could pop through objects, that would be even better, but I digress.
That'd be a little bit too much.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, I feel like that alone of just being able to cast spells anywhere on the battlefield, basically, given enough time. 30 feet of movement isn't that crazy.
That's not that crazy of an ability.
It's not that much speed. But I don't know. I think overall it's solid.
Yeah, it'll definitely have its uses.
I do also just like the image of it, because I could see, this is just purely flavor, but just moving it, you know, 30 feet and then just dropping a fireball right at its feet. Just because.
Right.
I just like the image of that.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Just like it just like flies through the air and then just boom, explodes on itself.
Yeah. So this is where another thing where I feel like there's a breakdown in mechanics to flavor, where if they're supposed to be the bookie wizards, and not bookie in the sense of taking and managing bets, you know what I mean? The scholarly type of wizards. Again, I would think it would all be more about changing and their spells and stuff like that, where this is then, yeah, you get this spectral form of a thing that you could cast through. Again, it just feels kind of like there's something about that flavor that just doesn't line up to me. It goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, that sort of awakened spell book, and I just don't like that. I'd rather see them being able to continue to modify their spells further. Then again, I guess I'll be stepping on toes of metamagic.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I think that's okay.
It was maybe a more permanent thing after a long rest. You could add modifiers to spells based on some sort of limit. And maybe it's a bit stronger because you can't just choose to do it in the moment. Something like that.
The thing that you have to realize is that the initial flavor is bookish wizard, but the flavor then evolves.
Bookish, that is such a better way to say that.
Yes, that is the word for it. But it's not bookish. It's you've awakened your book. It's book awakening. That's the flavor.
Yeah, well, no, it's
you start both. Here and then you end up, well, kind of.
You guys yelled at me at the beginning for only focusing too much on that, saying it's both.
It's both.
It's one to the bookish. Other. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I mean, I'll give you this, Kevin, just because, again, I have so many classes that I'm like, I just hate this. Why do you hate it? I don't know. It's stupid. So you're totally
I don't know. I'm mad.
Right. I do like the idea of a wizard who is more about manipulating their spells. And this one starts with that. It kind of touches on it, but it doesn't follow through. So being disappointed by that flavor makes a ton of sense to me. I like the awakened book flavor. So to me, it's like, that's fine. This is all great. Who cares about all of that? But, you know, I see where you're coming from there.
But yeah, mechanically, I think this will get uses. It adds a nice flexibility.
Yeah.
Which is neat. Maybe a little bit of scouting, but it's kind of hard because it shines bright light or dim light. So it's like, it's not exactly sneaky. I mean.
Yeah, it's really not worthwhile. Because it doesn't even pass through, again, objects, so it's not like you can just, like, have them poke their head into the next door or something. If anything, it'd be a really good way to freak people out, though. Because it's just, like, floating book just walks into a room and everyone's like, what the hell is that?
Right. Six levels of wizard to freak people out, ignoring that you can do it with the minor image cantrip.
Minor images, they don't even move, do they?
I think you could make it. Is it? I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
A six level illusion wizard could probably figure out how to make a book walk into a room.
Yes. I guess. But could it make it talk in a British accent?
I don't think yes this can. Oh yeah, an illusion wizard. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Once it gets major image, sure.
Yeah, which is like a third level spell, I think.
No, major image. I have major fifth image. Level.
On my bard.
Oh, I thought that was higher. To the looking it up.
Major image to cut ahead. Third level spell.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then you're right.
Anyways, yeah.
Six level. Dumb thing to look
at. It doesn't really matter that much. But we're just going down the rabbit hole of trying to be right.
Us? I don't think this thing can talk technically. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I don't think the manifest mind could talk. It doesn't, it can talk, it doesn't say you. It has a speech. Yeah, telepathically.
Right. I guess you're right. The fact that in the art it has a floating head that
it looks like a Disney. It looks like a Disney character. It does. Now, that should talk in a British accent.
But like what it really is like a near replicant. Where they have like a floating grimoire in the Never mind.
What it can be whatever you want. It can be like I know. Book or it can be
you know the newer game Nier Automata? There's like a,
I did not play that.
That's fine. Oh, okay. In that game, there's like a floating robot, but in the previous game, Nier Replicant, you have a floating book that follows you throughout like the entire game and is a serious companion. It is not a Disney-style goofy object.
Right.
But that's how you want to play it. I mean, if you want it to be goofy, let it be goofy. If you want it to be serious, it can be a serious book. I'm sure it will throw some people off.
All right. Next level.
All right. Master Scrivener. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's not a word in my regular vocabulary. This is a 10th level feature. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can create one magic scroll by touching your wizardly quill to a blank piece of paper or parchment and cause one spell from your awakened spellbook to be copied onto the scroll. Must be within 5 feet of you when you make the scroll. The chosen spell must be a first or second level and must have a casting time of one action. Once in the scroll, the spell's power is enhanced, counting as one level higher than normal. So if you put like a Scorching Ray on there at second level, it's now a third level Scorching Ray. You can cast the spell from the scroll by reading it as an action. The scroll is unintelligible to anyone else and vanishes from the scroll when you cast it or when you finish your next long rest. So let's just talk about that. There is additional parts to this feature at 10th level, but that alone.
So this again, since only you could read it, I feel that really limits it. I think it was a missed opportunity where you can't hand this off to someone else. And there's so essentially, it's a free second or third level slot.
Right.
That's what it is, which is fantastic. So actually at this point, they would have three free slots because they get the thing with the Awakened Spellbook where they can do the ritual for free.
Right.
And then at 10th, they get this. And then wizards just get the arcane.
Which gives even more spell slots recovery. But let's just say from this class, they get three, you said, three free spells. Right. So, yeah, I do think it was a bit of a missed opportunity, especially because looking at the Artificer, as I was saying, there's precedent here where they get a spell storing stone where they can put like 10 level 2 spells into this stone and they can hand that thing around like... like candy, I guess, on Halloween. Yes, I don't know. Yeah, I don't really have a good...
like cure wound stones that are being exploited. Right. Piss off the dungeon master.
Right. And maybe that's why they didn't, but I don't think this one's as exploitable as a, you know, again, 10 spells into a cure wound stone.
Yeah. Compared to, that artificer, I'm trying to pull it up, but spell storing...
stone, I think is what it was.
Spell storing item,
Item. Doesn't have to be a stone, I guess.
Yes, first or second level spell from the Artificer spell list that requires one action to cast. So that's basically the same. You can hand it off, and isn't it twice per... up to two times your intelligence modifier?
Correct.
Yeah, twice your intelligence modifier.
Yeah.
So like, up to 10, most likely.
Yeah. So that's... but
yeah, and you get this at 11th, where the wizard gets this at 10th. It's just...
major differences being, one, wizards get more spell options... so right. I guess that matters. Also, you know, they're getting upcast, which is kind of cool. You've got two different spells. They're comparable. I think that the Artificer is better. I will definitely say that.
Yeah. Well, it's getting upcast to maximum of 3.
Right.
So you could, like, do a second level spell, upcast to 3rd. Or it's first level spots, upcast to 2nd. I mean, it's not that crazy.
No, it's not.
No, I mean.
But what is nice is also at 10th level, they become adept at crafting spell scrolls, which they say are described in the treasure chapter of the Dungeons Master Guide, but honestly, I think they're described a little bit better in Xanathar's, which I'll get to in a second. But the gold and time you spend to make such a scroll is halved if you use your wizardly quill. So those numbers, which do come up in Xanathar's Downtime Revisited, laid out explicitly, is for a first level spell, it takes 1 day normally and 25 gold to make a spell scroll. So now we're putting that to half a day and 13 gold. So if you want to talk about making first level spells that other people can use, this is your option. Second level spells, a little bit more expensive, 125 gold, and they take 3 days. Sorry, I should be speaking in either halves or wholes. So normally they take 3 days and 250 gold. Have that day and a half, 125 gold. That's really cheap.
I don't know if I'd say cheap. I feel like that'd add up quick. It's nice. It's a nice discount on it all. I keep in mind of spell scrolls is that it needs to cast it, it needs to exist on your class list.
Right.
So it's not like you could be handing these off to the fighter or something like you can't with a spell storing item. So it's still a limit. But wizards, you know, have a really wide range of spells they know. And so if somebody could cast spells, there's a good chance it could be done and handed off. Yeah, we never really play around of creating spell scrolls. We also never really have wizards that much. I guess anybody can't they, as long as they know spells? Or is it only wizards?
I think you have to be given the ability to create them.
Okay.
I think, actually, I guess I don't really remember. In downtime, it's just
proficient in Arcana, and you have to have the material component. So technically, yeah, but
and you need to know the spell, I assume.
Yes.
Who's ever proficient in Arcana?
Wizards.
Wizards.
Wizards. End of list.
I think my current character is Embers, but
I remember. I'm not going to sit here and say that these later ones are like going to happen all the time for a ninth level spell. If we're looking at the later ones, a ninth level spell normally takes 48 work weeks and 250,000 gold.
Jesus.
Okay, so you're probably not going to get that one. Even halved, we're talking about 24 weeks and, you know, 125,000 gold.
Can you imagine taking the time to make a ninth level spell and then, like, it getting pickpocketed off of you?
No, I can't. I truly cannot.
That's a truly phenomenal level of wealth density. 250,000 gold. Which just, because there's no digital banking in this realm, that's just like a house full of coins.
Yeah.
The equivalent of one average size house filled to the brim with coins. Yeah. But I mean,
like multiple trips just to pay for the materials.
Right. But like once you get like still on the in-between, I feel like it takes the creating a spell scroll from unobtainable to now something that you might actually consider and should actually consider. Sure. And I still, despite me really liking this, view this as a failed feature because I just don't see this coming up that much. And it seems like the type of thing that only, how do I put, advanced players are going to pay attention to. And newbie people are just going to be like, I don't really know about that. You know, the DM's going to be like, creating a spell scroll, what are you talking about? And the player's going to be like, I don't know, I want to make a spell. Let me just...
It's in page 133 in Xanathar's. Right. It's like, dude, just cast magic missile or something.
Right. Stop right. it. Yeah.
Like, 48 work weeks? Not at my table.
Yeah. Like, I see this and I see tons of opportunity. And if I was playing this character, I would say every second of downtime, I'm going to be sitting there. I'm spending my money on scrolls. I'm going to be making scrolls. And that's just like, that's awesome to me. I'm going to have a like whole pocket. Every spell that I don't have prepared on a daily basis, I'm going to try and have a spell scroll of. So that's like, I'm always prepared. I've got this. And I, again, love that flavor. Love the idea. I just don't see this playing out well for most people.
You know what actually could be used for? Like, money making? You could let your character make money this way.
Right.
It's true.
Yeah. And, like, your imagined use of it, I think you'll find in actual play, it's going to be painfully slow.
Yeah.
Like, think about it, especially in our style of campaign, where it's like, we don't skip time. We play out every day. And it's like, that's going to feel really painfully slow.
I'd be asking for it, like from the group. I'd be like, hey, guys, can we like Let's all just chill
take
for a
48
week.
Work weeks off.
No, not 48.
No, yeah, I know.
But like fourth level, if it's like, hey, can we just like take a week of downtime? I'm asking for downtime. And I think that's where it's different is right now you guys, your characters don't have a reason to ask for downtime.
Right.
Perfectly viable. There's literally nothing wrong with that. This character lives off of downtime. And I would be asking for that and saying like, no, I need my time off. We just went on this big adventure. What are you talking about?
Right.
Like, that's part of my character is I want to sit here and I want to work on my scrolls. Why are we going out again trying to get ourselves killed?
That maybe I'm a jerk, but I can absolutely see the reaction. He's like, well, no, we're not just going to let everything we want to do sit for
all right,
me
no,
so
no,
you
no,
can get
no,
one
no, no, no.
third level spell.
Downtime is a reward. People need to stop thinking of like day by day that this has to happen. You can totally create these like temporal voids where nothing happens but your downtime activities. It's like, no, we got to stop the bad guys. Like, no, 2 weeks past nothing else happened in the world. You just made your spell scrolls. That's a, like a quest reward. You get 2 weeks of downtime.
It
That's how some people, Adventure League plays explicitly like this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want that and your players want it, give it to them.
You're not talking? Okay. I was being the jerk interrupting you, but I feel like I kept misreading when you were stopping. It very much depends on the campaign style. Where like the type of campaigns we've always played, it does not come up. And then especially any pre-written stuff, it's like, I mean, you're dealing with like world-ending events, like the campaign books. It's like you don't have downtime in those.
Yeah. Say, I mean, all that said, like it's super easy in my opinion to like make those opportunities. Even looking at just where our campaign's at right now, you guys went for an arena fight. And instead of me saying it's going to be in 2 weeks, I said it's in 3 days. If I said it was in 2 weeks, then you guys now have 2 weeks to kill where you can't really go too far away from this area. The reason why I didn't make it longer is because you don't use downtime. No one uses downtime when I give it to you.
Yeah, I don't think we would have accepted it.
Well, that's okay. That's besides the point.
It was 2 weeks. It's not worth sitting around for 2 weeks. We got stuff to take care of.
Now you're making decisions for the whole party. But that's besides the point. It's again, if you have characters that want to take advantage of that, it can be worked into the game very easily.
Yeah, it can. Yeah.
And that's still, I'll stand by. That's where this breaks down is because now if one character wants to do that and the rest don't, it can kind of become, it can cause some friction. Or if the DM just doesn't think about giving that all the time, then it's not going to play out this way. I think this feature works great for Adventure League, less so for actual table play, as much as I like it and want to use it.
Yeah. A kind of boost to this is maybe allow downtime activities like spell scrolls or really whatever, if it makes sense, while traveling. Like, as written, traveling as, like, if you are traveling, everyone picks the roles to do, you know, watching for danger or navigating or foraging. And if someone, maybe another role is they'll pick a downtime activity where they don't need crazy equipment.
Sure.
And they could sit on a cart and work on the spell scrolls for the 8-hour travel day.
Yep. Yep, definitely one way to do it. 2 hours on watch, and you're like, yeah, I'm only half paying attention, and I'm going to work on my spell scrolls instead. Who does that sound like?
Yeah, my character messing with the trinkets.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's 2 hours every day, which is fine for your first level spells, or it adds up over time.
Right.
All right. Enough on that.
There's ways to get in.
Yeah. I think it's a great conversation because this is a feature that you have to think about before taking and like discuss it with your DM. It's not straightforward, which makes it bad. But I love it.
Right.
All right. Last, though, is at 14th level, one with the word. Your connection to your awakened spellbook has become so profound that your soul has become entwined with it. While the book is on your person, you have advantage on all intelligence checks. Well, sorry, in arcana checks, as the spellbook helps you remember magical lore. Moreover, if you take damage while your spellbook's mind is manifested, you can prevent all of that damage to you by using your reaction to dismiss the spectral mind, using its magic to save yourself, then roll 3d6. The spellbook temporarily loses spells of your choice that have a combined spell level equal to that roll or higher. For example, if the roll's total is 9, spells vanish from that book that have a combined level of at least 9, which could mean 1 9th level spell, 3 3rd level spells, or some other combination. And if there aren't enough spells in this book to cover this cost, You just drop to zero HP, I guess, somehow. Oh, that's actually a really smart way of doing that, because otherwise somebody makes a spell book with one spell in it and says, sorry, my book doesn't have enough.
Right.
Anyways, you forget these spells temporarily until you finish 1d6 long rests, and you're incapable of casting the lost spells, even if you find them on a scroll or in another spell book. After you finish the required number of rests, they reappear in your spellbook. You can only do this once per long rest. I think we have it, folks. The most complicated ability I have ever seen in 5th edition.
And it's not that good. That is way too harsh of a penalty to avoid the damage from one attack.
I don't know, as a wizard.
Or just one source of damage.
Yeah, I mean, a dragon's breath? Those can be, like, wiping you out in one turn.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, as the capstone of the subclass, once per long rest, you could avoid the damage from one source of damage by forgetting 3d6 spell levels for 1d6 long rests. I mean, that could be 18 spell levels for 6 days. Like, in worst case scenario.
Yeah, that'd suck.
Yeah.
Guess we better take some time off adventuring while I make my spell scrolls and get my spells back.
Right. And it's like, you couldn't even use, because of the one line in here, you can't even have, like, a backup book. Like, when I was first reading through this earlier, I was thinking, oh, all right, so you have your backup spell book, and then you pull them out of that backup spell book, but it goes on to say where even if you find them in a spell scroll or another spell book, you still just like, it's just like it's gone from your memory. You're incapable of managing them.
So, all right, here's where I'm going to push back a little bit. First off, doesn't have to be prepared spells. By 14th level, you know a lot of spells, and a lot of those aren't really that important on a day-to-day basis. So even let's assume an average roll of 9, because that's what it should be. Finding 9 levels worth of spells that you're probably not going to need over the next 4 to 6 days, it's probably not going to be impossible. And at 14th level, the sources of damage do get pretty ridiculous. Like, we're starting to talk about 70 damage in a turn. That said, it's not per turn. It's from one source.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
So yeah, if you get attacked 4 times...
You can only do one of those.
Do it once. And also keep in mind, so then if you're talking about like that, where you have some junk spells to be able to just, which I could see wizards getting, especially if this is the wizard that you are, where like that's what your whole thing about collecting spells, even more so than a wizard normally is. Then it's no longer, you could do this once per long rest. You could do this once per 1d6 days. Because like, if you do it and then you roll a 4, and then for 4 days you don't have these junk spells, and then the next day you want to do it again, you need to pick new spells to forget.
It better be really damn important. Is really what
not dying is pretty damn important.
Yes, which is where I come back to. Is not dying is very important. But what I wish above all is that this could be used for somebody else. It's not though. It's only yourself. You can only protect yourself with it.
Right. Compare it to the Rune Knight. A third level fighter ability, they get, I think it's the cloud runes specifically, they could just, as a reaction, just transfer the damage to something else. It's essentially, it's better, actually. It's better than this, because it doesn't just negate the damage, it transfers it to something else.
Yeah.
And there is no penalty. It's not like the, like, forget 3 weapon proficiencies. I'm sorry. 3d4 weapon proficiencies for 1d6 minus your
proficiency.
That'd
be funny, though.
Stays. Yeah.
Now, that said, let's not go comparing things to the Rune Knight, because that shit is broken, but...
But no, it's pretty strong.
I can't disagree, and I don't know what it is about this class, I just can't quit it. I love this one, too. I love it! It's this.
Why?
Because it's this huge choice, and it has
choice. I actually
choice
do really like this feature, but as a 14th level feature with this hilarious outcome, it's just not very good.
Yeah, and I stand by, this is not simple. Oh my god, I had to read it like 3 times to really get what was
going
on. Yeah,
this is my other complaint. It's the longest subclass, which makes sense because it's the Order of the Nerds.
Yes.
And I don't like that. To put it in perspective, so you'll have like 30 spells by 14th level, so this is not that hard to pull off.
Yeah.
So it's not that bad, but it's just
just a bizarre class overall. I think they were like looking for something and they just kind of meandered into whatever this subclass ended up being.
Yeah. And yes, back on the flavor, this doesn't to me mesh with the flavor of you're the bookish wizard.
I don't know.
It's a little weird.
It is because a little
weird. Give yourself brain damage for a week to make yourself invincible. I don't know.
See, it's more like,
is because that it relies on, like, you have to have the manifest book out. So it's tying back into that. So this is like alternates between like classic nerdy bookish type thing, fine, the weird arcane sentience in your spellbook. And like it goes back and forth. And this is the other one that's on back on the arcane sentience in your spellbook and relies on that. And I don't like the flavor of it. I feel shoehorned in there. It doesn't fit to me. And just to clarify something real quick, the cloud rune, it's when the creature is hit by an attack roll. It's not any source of damage.
Okay, that's very so different, actually.
That does balance it out a decent bit. But still, I don't think this is a good 14th level wizard ability. It is too high and too strong of a penalty. If it came in lower and then you forget like one spell and once per long rest, you could avoid damage. Because there's a whole bunch of classes where it's like you could avoid the damage, or instead of dropping to zero, you don't.
This isn't the only long rest ability. Like, you wouldn't instinctively use this every long rest to make use out of it.
Right.
Because it's so brutal for the next six long rests up to.
Right.
So this is like the emergency of all emergencies, and as a class capstone, it's kind of... That kind of sucks. You don't, you use it in the worst of worst case scenarios, which isn't bad, but you just wouldn't get a whole lot of use out of it.
That's fair. Now, that said, this in a way scales very well, because the higher level you are, the more spells you have, the more junk spells you could probably find, and you know, backup spells you have. In like that same way of like, if I have to forget the snowball spell in place of Scorching Ray, okay, whatever. But the source of damage also generally gets higher and higher and higher. That's like the one thing I like about it. It's just the fact that you can negate like 80 damage. Just say, nope, never mind. I don't actually care about that right now. You know, I have like this, it's a decision that you make. And that's it. I don't know. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, all right, School of Abjuration's 14th level ability is you have advantage on every saving roll against spells and resistance to all spell damage.
That is
Conjuration
better.
Is all of your summons have 30 temporary hit points. That Divination sucks. Is you get a third portent dice. I mean,
those are these all are strong. Like
huge and impact how you play.
Yeah.
They will always come up. And they don't have major penalties.
I feel like I need to say this very explicitly, all right? This class has a ton of problems, and I love it, and I will defend it to the death on the principle of I like the class. And that's it. I'm totally with you. I think you're totally right on just about everything you're saying. Not even just about, just like every critique you have of this is correct. It is specific. The flavor is kind of weird and doesn't do anything for you, and I totally get why, but it does it for me, and I want to play the nerdy bookish wizard, like, all in, just 100% loves books. And I don't even like reading. Reading is stupid. That's not true. Reading's okay. But, like, I like it. I like everything about it, even though it sucks and is complicated and it hurts your head to read.
I'm fine with it being complicated, but yeah.
It's got to be some more payoff.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it does need just a little bit more oomph or less penalty for the 14th level feature.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know, even if it's just like changing up the dice, you know, like 1d6 spells of spell levels you forget, and for 1d4 days. I don't know how they landed on this amount.
3d6 has the potential to be pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, that would suck.
It's hilarious, though, too, because you could roll an 18, not have that many. If you overuse this and accidentally kill yourself.
Right?
That'd be hilarious.
That'd be such a good risk, though. You're like, oh, my God, if I don't do it, then I'm going to take like 150 damage. But if I do it, I might roll so high that I just die anyways.
That's another thing to think about is if somebody was really just like abusing the shit out of this, it would get so freaking complicated. You'd have to have this running list of how many days, which spells were gone. If you use this every day.
Well, you're not. You're not using this every day.
But if you did, and you could legally do that until you killed yourself.
But... that is your prerogative.
Which spells do you have today, Mr. Wizard? I've got 3 total spells left in this book.
I got a tensor's floating disc. That's all I got.
The goblin attacks. Well, I'm rolling it up. 7. Shit.
So
that's a good idea, Kevin. Yeah. The bookie wizard.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. Oh yeah. Come on, triple snake eyes. It's like.
No. It's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. Gonna happen.
Addicted to gambling with your own life.
Now I'm curious. I'd almost want to see at 14th level, just from the spells you learn normally in your wizard progression, like cumulatively, how many spells you have. Spell levels you have. It'd probably be easy math to add up.
It's how you pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you start off with 6 first level spells, and then you learn, 2 per, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So 32 spells, bare minimum.
And if for some reason you chose all level one spells,
which I don't even think is possible.
You can basically do it 1.5 times.
Right. So, yeah, you would have, that is a fair point. You would have a lot of spells.
Yeah, and that's, once again, not including any spell scrolls you find and copy into your book and, yeah, all that. So I don't know. I feel like I want to see it in actual play if you would, like, be thoroughly regretting it every time you do it because, you know, in the next day or two, those spells come up and you feel like an idiot, or if it's just a really cool way to avoid a ton of damage. Cool to me. Not cool to you, Kevin. I think we can agree to disagree there.
Yeah, that's fair.
But stripping away some of your own power in a sacrifice to keep yourself alive, I like that. The fact that it's from your book, books, I don't know.
you're killing the arcane sentience in your book. I mean, right. That's what it is.
Which you'd probably develop a bond with.
Yeah, so I don't know if is it the same arcane sentience that comes back?
Your call.
Yeah.
If you want to say no for the flavor, I like it.
Well, that's kind of a dick thing, then.
They're sacrificing themselves so that you can survive.
Well, you're choosing to sacrifice them, but yeah.
No. we can say that they're the ones choosing. They're choosing for me. But yeah, it is my choice.
The arcane sentience, it can't speak, it can't really communicate or anything, but I just know. It wants to do this for me.
Yes. It wants to give me temporary brain damage in order to save my life. Yeah, what a weird one.
Yeah.
The fact that you can't cast them off spell scrolls, too, like, that's the part that, from a flavor perspective, I can't understand for the life of me. Like, I get why from a meta perspective.
It's brain damage. It's very specific brain damage.
Right. Yeah. From a meta perspective, yeah. Totally get it. They're like, no, you chose to get rid of these spells. No cheating. That's it. But otherwise, it's like, I can still read all of these other spells. Why is this one out of my reach? Hey, you know.
So, yeah, that's a class.
Yeah, that's a class. They can't all be winners to everybody.
Yeah, this felt like it needed to be 2 separate ones. The one where you awaken the arcane sentience in your spellbook and do a bunch of kooky stuff with that, and then the bookish ultra erudite. There we go. Ultra erudite wizard.
What?
Big word of the day.
What does that mean?
Erudite. Educated.
Yeah.
Why don't you just say educated?
How educated people say educated.
No, it's how pompous people say educated.
That's what I said.
Is it erudite and not erudite?
Yeah. Erudite? I don't know. That's not like a missile or something.
I just made myself look like a fool by mispronouncing the big fancy word.
You didn't look very erudite, Kevin.
Nope. All right. I'm done with this conversation.
As most of our conversations end.
Yeah. We talked it into the ground.
Yep.
Cool. Thanks for watching.